The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, and my technical engineer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
Oh, it's a beautiful day here in Santa Rosa, and I have two special guests for this show. In the studio with me is Dr. Gillian Squirrel, founder and director of Homeless with Pets, and we'll be talking about her program. And I forgot to mention, I actually have three guests here, and I also have a little pooch here by the name of Scrabble, who's part terrier and part chihuahua, the cutest little puppy I've seen in a long time that Jillian brought in. I guess it's part of your rescue, Jillian. And also joining me will be Evelina Molina, a longtime human rights activist and a freelance journalist. And to her credit, she brought me back to KBBF 6 years ago. And we'll be talking about Andy Lopez and his birthday and the mural that we saw downtown in downtown Santa Rosa. But Evelina is going to be talking about there's a recall program going on here in Santa Rosa, in actually Sonoma County, and it's called Dump Trump Sheriff Recall Freedus Campaign that Evelina Molina is very active in, and she's going to talk about that and why some people in our community believe that is important. Well, what a weekend. On Saturday, I attended the unveiling of an original mural in memory of young Andy Lopez, who was shot and killed on October 22, 2013, causing a community, this community, to go into shock. The mural, you know, and also what was very interesting is that when they unfolded the mural, was also Andy Lopez's birthday. He would have been 17 years old. I mean, it's hard to believe that 4 years have gone by. Just time goes by so fast. I mean, it's unreal. The mural on many levels was beautiful expression of community. It consisted of three panels. The panel number one showed community and children playing. Channel number two was the picture of young Andy. They showed from a photograph. They turned it into a painting and it went into there's four different levels of the painting until it finally just fades away. Just actually a beautiful, 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 beautiful second panel. But then there's the third panel, which created some controversy. There was a picture of law enforcement aiding a young girl, and there were many in the audience that saw this to be problematic, particularly for his mother. And there was no remorse shown by the shooter, you know, when it happened. No apology from the sheriff's department, no saying that it was an accident or a mistake or any kind of statement. And Andy Lopez's mother was very, very upset about having law enforcement in that particular panel of the mural. And several people spoke up, and I have to say that the artist was very open to listening and to maybe looking at exploring to do the panel, that number three panel, in a different way. But what I would like to do is I would like to encourage my listeners to go down and look at the mural, you know, and email me at Elaine at Women's Spaces. Tell me your opinion. You know, I want to know how you feel about it. Actually, it's our community, and he was a young boy that lived in that area. And I think it's wonderful that they're doing this in honor of what happened. How else do you say it, in honor of what happened? I mean, it was a horrible tragedy that the community is still trying to heal from, and this is one level of healing. And, you know, it's really interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine who's very upset about this mural, and I couldn't understand. And some people think that they're they're making him into a saint. Well, no, they're not making him into a saint. What this is all about is to make sure that the community does not forget that this happened. Because once you forget, you don't make any changes. And we're demanding changes. We're demanding accountability in our community. So you have to keep reminding people that this happened. A 13-year-old boy was shot with 7 bullets in 10 seconds. His life was over. You know, and we have to recognize that, and we want to prevent that from happening to other children. So that's why these things are in the community. That's why there's Andy's Unity Park. You know, it's in honor of him as a human being, but also the main purpose of this is to remind people that this happened in our community, and we have to stay steadfast and make sure that it does not happen again. So again, I encourage my listeners, go down. It's at the old Albertsons parking lot next to the Dollar Tree on Sebastopol Road. Is very, very visible there. And email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. Remember, there's two S's in the middle. Let me know what your thoughts are. You know, maybe I'm a little off the wall. You never know. I like to hear from my audience. You know, let me know what you think about the mural, and what are some of your thoughts about what's going on in our community. Well, like I said, it was a pretty intense weekend. On Sunday, Ken and I went to the memorial of Marnie and Chris Roth's firstborn son, Branch Roth, who was killed by law enforcement on May 12, 2017, after being tasered. And still, the amount of times he was tasered is not known, but there is an estimate that it was twice, and perhaps the second time he was hit that he had a heart attack. You know, it's, I mean, when you look at it, Marnie Roth and I have met through the Justice Coalition for Andy Lopez, and somehow her and I, we connected very, very strongly. And when I found out, you know, that her son was killed in this fashion, I mean, my heart just went to my feet. I mean, that's all I could say. You know, there but poor fortune go you or I. You know, we do not want to see our children gunned down. That's why it's so important that we have oversight, that we have somebody overlooking things. When you have oversight, it doesn't say the police are bad. It doesn't say we don't need the police. What it's saying is that we just want to make sure that you're doing your job. After all, these folks are carrying guns. They're carrying loaded weapons. They're carrying batons. They're carrying tasers. They can cause a lot of harm to human beings. That's why you need oversight. And why not? I mean, even when I was working in the corporate world, I had oversight. I had to answer to somebody. I had to have accountability. Why is that such a struggle? It just doesn't make sense to me. Well, in honor of their son, Branch Roth, he was 41 years old. And from all the things that I heard, you know, just at any memorial, you will hear most of the time the same thing. He was a good son. He was a good friend. Someone was in love with him. You know, I mean, all the things we hear, family crying, brothers and sisters not knowing, oh my goodness, how did this happen? I mean, we have to start thinking of the impact some of these shootings have on families. And, you know, there's an old saying, there but poor fortune go you or I. Well, Branch sounded like he was a pretty sensitive person. And I want to read something that I picked up because I think it kind of comforted me. You know, when you start thinking about it, I mean, like, hey, listen, I'm 77 years old, you know. Who knows? One day at a time, you just never know when it's going to happen. But this is so beautiful. So I thought I would read this. This is to honor the Chris and Marnie Roth and their family and, of course, their departed son, Branch Roth. So here's what I'm going to read. And supposedly, this is Branch talking to his family. When I come to the end of my journey, and I travel my last weary mile. Just forget, if you can, that I ever frowned, and remember only the smile. Forget unkind words I have spoken. Remember some good I have done. Forget that I have ever had heartache, and remember I had loads of fun. Forget that I stumbled and blundered and sometimes fell by the way. Remember, I fought some hard battles and won ere the close of the day. Then forget the grief for my going. I would not have you sad for a day. But in summer, just gather some flowers and remember the place where I lay. And come in the shade of every, and come in the shade of the evening when the sun paints the sky in the west. Stand for a few moments beside me and remember only my best. I think all of us, when we leave this earth, we just want people to remember our best. You know, life is such a treasured gift. And I want to send my condolences out once again to the Roth family. And also to all the folks out there that continue to work and to struggle to bring accountability to not only our counties, but all the counties across the globe. You know, we all live on a planet Earth. We all live together. Even the police are human. And we all have to recognize that. And we all have to put on our compassion button, turn on our compassion button and our empathy button. And then when we go, hopefully everybody will only remember the best. Well, that's a lot. That's a lot to say. You know, we had two things that happened this weekend. Here we had the Andy Lopez mural, here a young boy shot by law enforcement, and then we had the memorial for Branch Roth, another young man shot by law enforcement. Of course, he was 41 years old. He had a little bit of a life. Andy Lopez, he was only 13. But again, you know, the great spirit is the one that should determine our lifespan, not the barrel of a gun or of a taser. Anyway, this is, I know it's kind of a sad moment, and, you know, it's, you know, I try to start the show off with, you know, a real positive note, but I got news for you. I have to be myself, and this was a very, very difficult weekend for me. I mean, thank God I have my friends and, of course, my dear friend and partner, Ken Norton, you know, that we go through all these together. And we're going to take a musical break, and before I go on to the break, I want to do a shout-out to one of my dear, dear friends. Actually, I call him my brother. My brother Lee Gooding, who we just had him kind of a fundraiser for him 2 weeks ago. He's into stage 4 cancer. He's going to be going in this morning for some treatments. And I just want to send my love and my caring and sharing across the airways. And hopefully he's listening. He's a regular fan here of Women's Spaces. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and I decided, you know, we got to bring in something spiritual. And one of our favorite things for Ken and I is we love the prayer of St. Francis. I mean, it's not, to me, it's not a religious, you know, even though they use the word Lord in there, it's really not a religious song. It's a song that should, it's a poem or a saying or whatever you want to call it that needs to open your heart. And what you're doing is you're asking the great spirit or the higher power or the universe, who knows what it is. I mean, we're all, you know, spinning on a planet. Who knows where we are in the middle of Earth? I sometimes wonder, gee, I haven't fallen off today. But, you know, I just thought we would hear something spiritual. So I'm going to play the prayer of St. Francis, and it's sung by a woman by the name of Ellen Fiore. I felt I needed something spiritual to remind me what's important in the world. All this violence will never have peace. Listen carefully, because I believe if we all prayed or asked for what St. Francis wrote, we may have a chance. When we come back, I will be talking with Dr. Gillian Squirrel, founder and director of Homeless with Pets.
There is here. and where there's sadness, ever joy. Oh, Master, grant that I may never see so much to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to
me an instrument of your peace. That's all I ask. Where there's darkness, let me bring light. I mean, come on, folks. What a simple prayer. Make me an instrument of your peace. Imagine if all of us had that attitude. Well, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces, and I am your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my first guest, Dr. Jillian Squirrel, founder and director of Homeless for Pets. And also we have little Scrabbles here, who is a combination of a Chihuahua and I think a little terrier. Well, welcome. Welcome, Jillian. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And shall I tell the story of Scrabble?
Well, let me give the folks a little introduction first, and then we'll talk about Scrabbles. Jillian Squirrel describes herself as a social scientist in action, as someone with a keen commitment to taking the most of theory and practice and having one inform the development of the other. She is relatively a new arrival to Sonoma County, having come from the UK with a background in both direct service provision and with an academic background in the evaluation of social programs. Struck by the volume of homelessness in Santa Rosa, I'd rather Sonoma County, she saw a gap in our provision for people living homeless and started developing strategies to address that gap. That gap was what happens to people living homeless with animal companions. In 2016, after a couple of years of pilot work, she founded the nonprofit Homeless with Pets. Jillian Squirrel has a wide range of interest, and Homeless with Pets plays to both concerns to support the power of the human-animal bond and concerns with social justice and welfare. What a beautiful introduction. Well, welcome, Jillian. Welcome to Women's Spaces. And also, we have another guest with us, little Scrabble. So, Jillian, why don't you, before we go into the questions and answers, tell us a little bit about Scrabbles, because I think that'll give the folks an overview of what your program is all about.
So Scrabble was is part of an accidental litter. So Homeless with Pets does encourage people to engage in spay neuter for their animals, and we do help people to pay for that and help transport the animals to be spayed and neutered. We do have a pet overpopulation problem in the US and other parts of the world. So Scrabble was an accidental part of an accidental litter, conceived on the Santa Rosa Avenue in the storage units there, somewhere between E19 and E23. And the person who had the mother dog, Lola, was incredibly responsible, brought her dog Lola to one of our free vaccine and wellness clinics for a vet exam in the period leading up to the whelping. She brought us the puppies after 3 weeks, after the litter had been born. And then at 7.5 weeks, two of her friends turned up and said, "Here are the puppies and here is Lola. I'm afraid Stephanie was the person who was attacked by the man with the hammer."
Oh, my God.
4 days before our wellness and vaccine clinic. So the two friends were enormously responsible. Stephanie had been hugely responsible about the litter and had, in fact, hired a storage space so the animals could at least play on a substrate that wasn't going to be risky with Parvo before they had been vaccinated. So so we took some of the litter and medicated Lola, the mother, and obviously we keep waiting for word about what's happened to Stephanie. So I have I have three small puppies with me as a result of an incredibly brutal and tragic attack on a woman who was homeless.
Well, you know, it's so interesting how people put judgments. I mean, that's what I love about that St. Francis prayer. You know, make me an instrument of your peace. It means you're a little bit more accepting and not as judgmental against people. Like, oh, you're homeless, so you're in a category, or oh, you're black, or oh, you're, you know, whatever people want to do and whatever they want to judge. It's very, very sad. Well, I'm really sorry to hear about the killing of this young woman.
Well, she was brutally attacked, not
She wasn't killed. She was just attacked.
Killed.
Okay, well, that's a blessing. So are these dogs going to be up for adoption, or is this just something that she's going to continue to keep?
Well, I will keep Scrabble, and we're looking for homes for the other puppies.
I want Scrabble. She's so adorable. She just lights up the whole room here. Makes it, you know, after we're talking about, you know, Andy Lopez and Marnie and Chris Roth's son Branch, I mean, it's just a welcome to have little Scrabble in the studio with us. Well, Jillian, Dr. Jillian Squirrel, and by the way, folks, I did ask Jillian. I says, "Jillian, is that your real last name, Squirrel?" And she said yes. So I think it's interesting that you have that type of last name and you're so involved with animals. So tell us, how did this whole idea of coming up with you with Homeless for Pets, what was your motivation, and when did that light bulb go off? Like, oh, wow, I just have to do this.
So I tend to have one of those, I have to do this types of personality and mentality.
Eveline and I can definitely relate to it.
So in the UK, I'd worked a lot with homeless populations, both in terms of direct service provision and in terms of evaluations. And really, you can't help but be struck by how dense the population of people living homeless is in Sonoma. It features in always the bottom 10 small counties in the U.S. for having high-density populations of homelessness, and however much people are working on it, and people are doing all sorts of things to work on the issue of people having to live homeless, but nevertheless, we do have that as an issue. So it struck me, really being very impressed by the power of the human-animal bond, and you said Scrabble lights up the room, and probably she's got everybody's oxytocin flowing now and dealing with everybody's stress.
Well, we're all happy.
You're all happy. So what happens if you're homeless and you have an animal? And why should somebody who is homeless not have an animal?
You know, I've asked myself that question. Sometimes I will see, you know, asking for money and they'll have a dog. And I say, gee, how is that possible? So go ahead, explain that
okay.
a little bit. I think that's very important.
So it transpires really that a significant minority of people living homeless are likely to have an animal. Nobody actually knows how many. And I'm running on a figure of 24%, which was a guesstimate from the National Coalition for the Homeless way back in 2009. But experientially, that does not seem an unreasonable figure. So anytime you go to a parking lot or to an encampment, it, you know, just over a quarter or just around a quarter feels experientially right. So if we take the point in time count for 2017, apparently, we've got 2,835 people who are without shelter or who are living homeless, and two-thirds are not going to be sheltered. So if we work with 24%, we've got 680 people who are likely to be with animals and homeless. If you have an animal, it's harder to get into any type of temporary accommodation. It's certainly harder to get into permanent accommodation. And for some people, it's difficult to get services. And, you know, why that's the case, we could speculate. And I often talk with people who are providing services about their animal policies. But, I mean, there are issues about fear of bites or zoonosis or dander. And for some projects, it's probably a bridge too far to make it an interspecies project. But people who have their animals with them usually have come from a housed situation and have their animal. So their animal's part of their past, their animal's symbolically part of that bridge, that hope for the future. And the animal gives an enormous amount of stress buffering, protection, security, love.
Well, you know, we have a dog, Ken and I. We have a little dog, Rosie, who's a rescue dog. And I can't imagine if anything like that happened to us, giving her up. I mean, I never thought of it in that context. Like, all of a sudden you're homeless and you have this animal. I know when we got her at the shelter, we really questioned how did we get such a well-behaved, a dog that cost probably $600 on the open market. How did this happen? And probably what you're saying, probably someone became homeless or couldn't afford to keep the animal. So it's a big step when people become homeless and decide they keep their animal. Would you agree with that?
I'm not sure if it's a big step they decide to keep their animal. Most people simply wouldn't give their animal up.
But so I mean, the idea of they're not going to have the financial or have the security that all of a sudden they're on the street and they're responsible not only for themselves but also for their animal.
So most people make sacrifices to make sure that they're feeding their animal. We honor and it is honoring the human-animal bond and try to work with people so they can provide the best form of care that they can. So we started the project in 2014 and were distributing food, trying to find out what people's needs were. And one of those needs was access to veterinary care. So we don't have the resources to have a full-time vet and provide a full suite of veterinary provision.
Do you have vets that volunteer?
We have volunteer vets and volunteer vet techs, and they we have a two or three times a month wellness and vaccine clinic. So core shots are dealt with. If an animal has some small accident or small infection, that can be dealt with. And we have vets who will help us with low-cost treatment, and we can usually afford to pay something towards that.
Well, you know, I have to say this, Jillian, I really do. I really am very impressed with this program, because I think what happens is, as a human condition, is we're very judgmental. You know, rather than looking at the circumstances, looking at what is going on with people, we're going to make this judgment. Well, they're this, they shouldn't do this. And so it gives us an idea of not only some of the challenges of being homeless, you know, just separating from a pet. I mean, like I said, if I had to do that, I couldn't do it. I couldn't. And I know that Evelina has, now she has two dogs. So she's not going to be able to separate either. So here we are, by the grace, you know, by there, but for fortune, go any one of us, there you are, homeless, and that's like your baby, you know. So how do you help people understand that this is okay, and that that's one question I have for you. And secondly is, how do you get all these people to volunteer? I mean, I think it's amazing that you have vets in the community that are volunteering to do that. I mean, that's just an amazing thing to me.
So I think, one of the reasons we have our trailer is partly because, obviously, if you're homeless, you don't always have transport. So we want to go to where people are and to take a clinic to where people are.
Oh, so you have, like, it's like mobile?
Yes, we have a trailer, a cargo trailer that we tow. But it's also a way to perhaps lower the barriers to people being able to to veterinarians and vet techs being able to volunteer. So we have the infrastructure, we keep all the paperwork, the records, there's a stocked trailer and somebody can volunteer for a period of time and that's their commitment. They don't have to worry about the parts.
So let me make sure I understand this. So your program consists of a trailer that you travel around with. You help. You have these three clinics a month, is what you're saying. Three times a month, care is available. So people who have animals who are homeless, they would contact you, and then they could come to the trailer, and you would have a volunteer doctor, veterinarian that would do shots or look them over to make sure they're okay, and then help them with food.
So we do that. We put out a lot of flyers. We have a lot of. We have about six people who are living homeless who act as interns, and they walk around and they'll distribute flyers at various types of events.
So there's another level to it. There's another component, because now you're taking people that are homeless, giving them some action to give them a little sense of pride and help in the community, and they're also helping animals.
And they will set up the events and take them down. We also have quarterly grooming events. We distribute food out with the clinic events and work on issues around sort of humane education training. And we do, as I say, have a vet who very generously donates time. So we transport some animals to his practice and dental work can be done or a mask can be removed. So we have our strap line on the side of the trailer and on everything, which is about compassion for both ends of the leash. So partly working with the animals, with the human-animal bond, helping support people to look after their animal is part of it. We've started a food project where we distribute human food to humans, as well as on those occasions we obviously carry the animal food and flyers about our activities. But we had occasions where people would ask us for a can of dog food. And when someone asks you for a single can of dog food, you have to then ask the question, that's going to be a very tiny animal, or why do you only want one can of dog food? And it was, people were hungry and thought that they would chow down themselves on a tin of Pedigree Chum.
So did that kind of encourage you to start a little bit of a food plan?
So we started a food project. We started what we called Breakfast with Pets and ran sort of some breakfast events for people that were living with their animals. People with animals are often those who are going to be longer-term homeless because it's harder to get into service.
I'm going to have to interrupt you here because we're coming to the end of our segment. Time goes by so darn fast, you don't know what hit you. And I have to say this. This is such a beautiful program. I am so happy to have you in the studio, and I want to encourage the folks to read the Sonoma County Gazette, Santa Rosa Snippets. I also have a little article about this organization, so there's a lot of contact, and we'll also put contact information on our website. So, Jillian, why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you? Is there a website, and how can they participate? Is there anything that the public can do that can support you? Because I know, just like me, there are hundreds of animal lovers out there. In fact, if you're a little confused and you want to get a hold of Jillian and you're not satisfied, you can always email me at Elaine@womenspaces, and I'm happy to get the information to you. So go ahead, give us your website and tell us how folks can support your effort.
Okay, well, thanks for that invitation. So we have a website which is very simply homelesswithpets.org.
And very informative, by the way.
Thank you. And we have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com, and then it's workingdog, all one word, .co. And we post our upcoming events both on the Facebook page and on the website. We always need dog food. We always need leashes, harnesses. We always need toys. So practically we need those things that we can distribute. And we have some donation bins at Pet Care. Mendocino Avenue in Fulton. We have Blue Sky up in Roanoke Park, and Annerley up in Sebastopol. So we've got certain vets with donation bins permanently. We, of course, need financial resource, and we're about to have to pay our $7,000 insurance next month. So we always need money to deal with the infrastructure costs, the coal costs. We always like to have volunteers and people who can help in various ways. We're, as I say, developing the Human Food Project, Food in a Flash, and we will be running the Winter Warmth program for the county come October this year, so we'll need help with that. And if anybody out there has a spare warehouse or a very large piece of ground that they would let us park several trailers on, we really need some help with that. The Winter Warmth program is going to need 900 to 1,000 square foot of space for storing the camping gear and outdoor clothes. So if anybody wants to donate that for a few months, we certainly need that.
How do they get a hold of you directly?
Directly, email is good. So that's, again, homelesswithpets@gmail.com. And then the phone number, 707-847-8DOG.
8DOG. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, Dr. Jillian Squirrel, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming into Women's Spaces and bringing this adorable little Scrabbles. Hey, Scrabbles, it's just been wonderful. And you know, folks, one of the things that was so interesting when I ran into this program, I mean, the thoughts I had about it were very, very interesting. And I realized on some levels that, you know, I'm judging people, and we got to stop doing that. We got to look at human beings as human beings, you know, as needs. You know, everybody has a story. Everybody has a story, and until you know their story, please, let's not judge. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jillian Squirrel, for coming in with Homeless Pets, and if anybody needs to have any information or anything, it will be posted on Women's Spaces, which is www.womensspaces.com. Remember, two S's in the middle. Well, wow, I just, you know, I'll tell you, folks, I love this show. I love this show. Well, we are going to now take a musical break, and we're going to play one of my favorite songs. And I think it's very important with the interview that we're going to be having with Evelina Molina. It's one of Leonard Cohen's, one of his great songs. It's sung by a woman by the name of Holly Figueroa. And I just love her. I love her arrangement of this. It's really, really interesting. It's Leonard Cohen's song, Everybody Knows. And when I return, I will be talking with Evelina Molina, longtime activist and freelance writer. She is also one of the major organizers for Dump Trump Sheriff Recall Freedus Campaign. Wow, what a name. Anyway, let's go ahead and listen to Everybody Knows.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls that the fingers crossed. Everybody knows that the war is over. Everybody knows that the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows that the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling. Like the father or the dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. And everybody knows. And everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful. Give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet. So many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. it's now or never. Everybody knows that it's me or you. Everybody knows that you'll live forever. When you've done a line or two, everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows, and everybody knows. And everybody knows that the plague is coming. And everybody knows that it's moving fast. And everybody knows a naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. And everybody knows the scene is dead. There's gonna be a meter on your bed. And we'll disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. And everybody knows what you've been through. From the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach of Malibu. And everybody knows it's coming apart. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows.
Everybody knows. Just in case you haven't caught it, I'm a frustrated singer. Everybody knows. Yes, well, welcome back. You are listening to Women's Spaces, and my name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. And with me in the studio is my second guest, Evelina Molina. Welcome, Evelina. Welcome once again to Women's Spaces.
Thank you, Elaine. It's always great to be back home at KVBF.
It's always so strange when I have you on the other end, you know, that I'm interviewing you. I mean, it's such an honor. You know, Evelina, before we start, let me tell my folks a little bit of background about you. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Evelina is a longtime human rights activist. She is currently a freelance journalist and continues her activism to this day as a member of the Community Action Coalition of Sonoma County and Justice for Andy Coalition. You know, it's very interesting. I met Evelina. We've been friends now probably about 8 years. It's so hard to believe. You know, we're on quite a journey. And before we start talking about the recall campaign that Evelina is involved with, I want to take us back a little bit. I want to take us back to Saturday afternoon when we were all down and celebrating young Andy Lopez's birthday on June 3rd. He would have been 17 years old, and it was quite heartwarming to be on the grounds of the park that is being built called Andy's Unity Park. And I want to say it one more time. You know, we are not the coalition. I'm very familiar with the folks at the coalition who are working, who worked very hard on the park. We are not, they are not trying to immoralize this young man. They're not trying to make him a saint or a martyr. What they're trying to do is make sure that his memory does not fade because of what happened. And as mothers, we have to realize that if it happens to one mother's son, it will happen to another mother's son. And what's so interesting to me is how I personally got involved is that, and by the way, a shout out to Greg Ferris, because he was the one who actually pivoted me to get involved with the Andy Lopez Coalition. He was one of the participants in the Gay Pride, and he's just a wonderful human being. I was at a North Bay organizing project when he stood up and he offered $7,000 to the Lopez family to help them with funeral expenses. And at that time, I was able to meet Sue Hay Lopez and her young son, Andy's little brother, and Andy's sister, and Andy's older brother. And I remember looking into this mother's eyes, and I said to myself, Great Spirit, do anything you want to me, but I never want to receive that phone call telling me that my child, that something has happened to my child. So it was really a riveting moment, and that's how I got involved. And it really threw me into action in a way that I have not been involved in a long time. And I began to see some of the things that happen in our community. So I want to do a shout out that we are going to have Andy's Unity Park. We did celebrate the birthday. We did celebrate the mural that, like I mentioned at the beginning, beginning of the program. I encourage people to go look at it and email me and tell me how you feel about that that third panel. That's Elaine@womenspaces.com. And now what we're going to do to honor Andy Lopez's mother, Suhe Lopez, we're going to read the letter. That this is the letter that we wrote. Evelina, who read the letter? Concha
Concepcion.
Yeah, she read the letter, and they read it in Spanish and English. And because we are a English-speaking station, English-speaking program, excuse me, on a bilingual station. I always like to kid. I'm the bi and bilingual. I'm going to have Evelina go ahead and read Suhe Lopez's letter that she wrote to her son.
Yes, this is a letter that Suhe wrote in honor of Andy, and it was read at Andy's Unity Park for his birthday. And it goes like this. Okay, I hope I can do this without breaking down, because every time I
we'll all cry.
There are no words to describe the love that one has for their child. Andy, your love and your presence is everywhere. It's in the air, in the heavens, in everything I see, and your legacy will be honored forever. I love you. My soul, my spirit, my essence, and all my being is with you. It even reaches other dimensions where you dwell. Warrior angel, don't ever give up your battle against the enemy called injustice, because I will not. I love you, and you will live in me forever. For a mother, for this mother, there's no such thing as a birthday. Because a child lives in the heart of a mother in every instant and is reborn in every moment and forever will be unconditionally loved. I love you forever, Andy. Mom.
Well, that was beautiful, Evelina. And I want to thank Suhe for sharing that with us and for writing. And again, once again, to as a mother, as a grandmother, and as a potential great-grandmother, my grandson's going to be getting married on June 17th. My heart goes out. So thank you so much, Evelina Molina, for reading that and for staying involved. You know, it's a very emotional thing what has happened in our community, and people have to recognize that. I mean, someone told me, I was having a conversation with somebody, and they said to me, why can't you get over it? And I said, wait a minute. Get over it? Is Suhe Lopez ever going to get over it? Is Marnie Roth ever going to get over it? Is Val Henshaw ever going to get over it? No, they're not going to get over it. They lost sons, and we have to recognize that. Well, let's take a deep breath. Let's go into the next segment of our interview here. Well, Evelina, you know, you're always involved. You're involved in so many things, and right now you're involved in this recall action for the sheriff. And I realize, you know, when you read the letter and we start thinking about Andy Lopez, it becomes a very an emotional thing and an angry thing. And what's happening here with this recall, I don't see it as an emotional thing or an angry thing. I take it as the community stepping up and saying, you know something, there was a wrong done here, and we want to recognize it. So talk a little bit. How did you become involved as an activist? What was the first thing that really threw you out in the world and said, hey, I got to do something?
Well, I would definitely say it was my desire to be in solidarity with our immigrant brothers and sisters, undocumented, because I was born in this country. I have a privilege to be able to walk around and feel safe. And I just realized how many people can't do that. And I thought, you know, if they can't do it, then I need to do something to, you know, help them or at least be in solidarity with them. So it's always been about the human rights of Latinos, Mexicans, and the immigrant undocumented. That's my start.
Well, you know, when we first met, when you were here working with KBBF, and we went through, oh my God, so many trials and tribulations to get this station where
Yay.
It is today. I mean, thank God.
Definitely worth it.
But what motivated you around, particularly around the Andy Lopez situation? What was the one thing that you said, you know, hey, this is not right. I've got to do something.
Okay, well, it's probably going to be controversial that I'm going to say this, but I personally don't believe that that was the justified killing, even though I know the DA and the Board of Supervisors and the sheriff all feel that it was a justified killing. As the judge just said in the Ninth Circuit, Gelhaus himself admitted that he did not know whether the gun was pointed at him, the toy gun was pointed at him or not. And Gelhaus is a weapons expert. He's a weapons trainer, been to Afghanistan and Iraq multiple times. I think that's enough background to know the difference between a 13-year-old child walking home from school with a toy. It took 3 seconds for him to start unloading his weapon on a child, and 10 seconds later, Andy had seven bullets in his body, and 2 bullets had gone astray through the local fence, almost into people's houses. So, personally, myself, I don't believe that it was a justified killing. I don't care what the DA says or what. So we continue. That's my motivating factor right now is mostly Suhei, because Andy's gone. There's nothing we can do to bring him back. There will be nothing that will justify his killing, but we have to work for Suhei. She's the one right now that is dealing with all this pain every day and is being attacked herself psychologically, emotionally. The mural is a sample of that psychological abuse that she's going through.
So. Yeah, it's a hard one. It really is. So tell us a little bit about this coalition to do a recall. I think you know we all of a sudden there was a recall. I heard a recall was happening, and then the next thing we knew, we read in the paper that the sheriff Sheriff Freitas is not going to be. This was his second term as sheriff, I believe, and he's not going to rerun. In fact, they've already have people that are up there buying for the position. So what was the motivation around all of a sudden recalling him?
Yeah, so it didn't happen all of a sudden. Kathleen Finnegan, who was the person who wanted to start this, had tried for 2 years knocking on doors of different community organizations asking for the support to make this happen. But organizations either didn't feel they had the resources, the time, or nobody really wants to take on the sheriff. So this is a long time coming, and I do, if Kathleen's listening, I want to say how honored I am to be working by her side. I am just so happy, and I'm so glad she didn't give up. She came to the Community Action Coalition. It's a small group, about 30 people, started at the Santa Rosa Junior College. There's still students on there, and they decided to take it on. It's a true David and Goliath story, but before I go into the Dump Trump's Sheriff Recall Freitas campaign, I do want to let people know that it's not just a recall campaign, but it's also an education. A lot of people don't know that the sheriff is the most powerful man in the county. He's powerful because he is unchecked. He's an elected official, so the Board of Supervisors have no say. He's not accountable to anybody. And it's also the one that has the biggest budget in the county of all the departments. It's $134 million annually, which is 45% of the entire general budget of the county, is run by one person who is completely unaccountable to anybody. He just does what he does the way he wants to do it. And he has proven that over and over again, multiple times. The other thing also that people don't know about the sheriff is the amount of lawsuits that they're involved in right now, the sexual harassment that's going on of their own women deputy sheriff's complaints. So there's a lot of inner turmoil. The sheriffs are all pulling mandatory overtime because they can't get enough sheriffs because the morale is so bad internally. And the Board of Supervisors really don't want to come out even vocally, symbolically, because they're in fear of their elected positions. If they take a stance and say what you're doing is wrong, they're not going to get the endorsement of the sheriff. So the board of supervisors are afraid of the sheriff. So he's the most powerful man. He's got all the weapons. He's got all the money, 45% of the budget, and zero accountability. That in itself should be enough to recall him. And he's done a really, he's done a very poor job. He still has another 2 years, even though he does not run again. It's another 2 years. And he's taken a strong position against immigrants in our community. And he's pro-Trump and pro-Sessions policy as it relates to cannabis and medical use and the deportation of undocumented families, the breaking up of our families.
Boy, oh boy. You know, that is really something when you start, when you put it all in one context in a few paragraphs, you know, to explain what is going on in our community.
And the only people that can have any kind of influence on the abuse of power that he has been exercising and the abuse of force is the people, because he is an elected official. So because he's by an election, he needs to be taken out by an election.
Well, I think what's interesting, you know, when you start thinking elected officers, you know, I think, I don't know what happens to people. I think sometimes they forget it's we the people that put them there and that we the people they're supposed to serve. And, you know, I think that the people, the public speaking out are very, very important. So we're coming to the end of our segment. You know, time goes by really quickly, and I'm really glad for that explanation, because I think it's important that people understand that. And you know something, another thing too, I have to say right here, just because I just realized that I did not say it at the beginning of the show like I usually do. I just want to remind people that the opinions stated here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF 89.1 FM, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. So continue. Tell us a little bit. We're really coming to the end of our segment. How can people get a hold of you, and how is this going on? How is it proceeding?
Okay, so the Community Action Coalition is in the process of collecting 35,000 signatures, which is what's needed on a petition to have a special election come up again a year before he gets his term, he terms out. And that petition basically says we want to investigate all the allegations of the of our group, and we want to see what this guy is up to. So you have between now and September to do all your investigations, and then when the election comes, you decide based on facts whether you want him to continue or whether you want him to be replaced by someone else. So we are on Facebook, Community Action Coalition Sonoma County. We have a website, communityactioncoalition.com. And then we also are at the Wednesday night market, Wednesday in 4th Street, collecting signatures for that petition. And we are there every Wednesday, and we're more towards the mall on 4th Street in what's called the free speech zone. And you're able to come over there. We need lots of volunteers to help us collect signatures at different festivals and events. So if you are a person that wants to hold the most powerful man in Sonoma County accountable, and find out what's really going on with $134 million annually, and the lawsuits and the allegations of improprietary actions in the sheriff department, you can come sign the petition and start doing your homework. And we're there, and we need other people to help us. So thank you, Elaine.
Well, I want to thank you, Evelina, for articulating an issue that is so, so well. Well, that's it, folks. That's it for our show. I want to remind you that the next two Mondays are going to be rerun shows, because I will be involved with my grandson, Ryan Jensen, and Amber Lember are getting married on June 17th, and I'm going to be very much involved with that. A special thank you to Dr. Jillian Squirrel, founder and director of Homeless with Pets, and a special shout out to Little Scrabbles, who made a visit here. And thank you so much to activist Evelina Molina for being such great guests, and once again proves it's ordinary women that are doing extraordinary things. Well, you've been listening to Elaine B. Holtz, and you've been listening to Women's Spaces, and I want to remind everybody once again, the children are our future. We must never lose sight of that. And you know, it's very interesting what Evelina was talking about. What's the matter with accountability? Nothing. Anyway, this is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
She knows everything you do because of